Well, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out as my voice cracks. I must be emotional or crazy.
You're growing, Robert. You're growing.
There we go. Anyway, we're talking the last half hour about city council candidacies and you know, some of the emergent things. I mean, it's actually, let me just say one quick thing on that. It's funny now that I'm like a candidate, it's amazing how many people that come up to go, well, what's your platform? You know, it's sort of like, all right, man. All right. So that's what it's all about now is what are your big issues, whatever. And I was sort of a little thrown by that sometimes, because I said, well, you know, your number one job as a city councilor is to be a representative.
Right.
It's actually, I this may sound like I'm being a wuss, but to me, if you go in there with an agenda that's a mile long, I think you've already missed the point.
It doesn't make you sound like a wuss. It makes you sound like you know what the job is. So like I've always looked at the city council as like a board of directors, not state legislators.
Right.
So
I think what the primary job is used to be reasonably intelligent and level-headed and sensible and responsive.
Oh, now that I'm the only person on this screen without a conflict of interest, Robert, I would just say if there's eight other people you have to work with, like number one. And then there's also, if you're going there, tell me you want to stop climate change, you want to fix the schools, you want to fix the roads, you want to get universal broadband, you're a joke. So like, what are you talking about? So I just think that like having your head screwed on, and like, I think if people ask me like what my agenda would be, is to have the least amount of policy orders in any given term.
It's interesting. It was one of the gentlemen who came by to sign my papers yesterday. He said, he says, well, you know, what are your issues? And then I said, well, I don't know. Like, and then he basically said, look, the less you do, the more I'm going to like you. he didn't mean you should just sort of screw around for 2 years, but he basically said, we don't really need people who just want to be passing ordinances and hitting mandates upon people just for the sake of doing so. The thing is that everything you do as an elected official should have some sort of rational basis that makes sense in the times.
As our city council just learned when they passed Budo, that by doing big things doesn't mean you get your name in the paper. In fact, by doing big things means that Patrick Barrett gets his name in the paper a lot more than the mayor does. So, and in fact, the mayor had to go and make a phone call to the Globe to remind them that they had something to do with that, because Quentin took all the credit and he was on the front page of the friggin' thing. So,
as you have pointed out, and I'm going to completely agree with you, a lot of actions of political figures, not just at the local level in Cambridge, but at the State House, yes, I'm thinking of you, Mike Connolly, and also up in the United States Congress, you know, when you think of like the various Justice Democrats or the wackadoodles on the Republican side, it really is kind of like, as you said, Patrick, it is a little like performance art, you know? And I don't know that I'm happy to have elected representatives who are being paid by me, who are just doing theater, you know?
I wanted so much to run this time because I'm so sick of it, man.
To be clear, Patrick, I damn well wanted you to run too, but I think you made the right decision because your family counts.
I'm still married, so like,
you know, yeah, there we go.
It's a win.
Let's talk school committee. Okay, so again, the oft forgotten stepchild of Cambridge political world is the school committee. So again, this year, what happened was for school committee, for a while, actually, there wasn't too many people pulling papers, and three people were not going to run again. So Freddie Fantini said he wasn't going to run. And Aisha Wilson was going to try and make the transition to city council. So that creates a couple of vacancies right there. I think those are the only two then, right? So anyway, I'll mention the incumbents as we go here, but the first person to pull papers was Eugenia Schra, or married name is Eugenia Schra. How do you pronounce the last name?
I'm gonna say Hugh, but I'm sure she'll email me right now. I haven't endorsed any single person on this list so far, but Eugenia is awesome. She's running on a platform that kids should learn math and learn how to read.
I got a message an hour or so ago from David Weinstein. So I believe that there's actually going to be on the next school committee meeting, there's actually going to be a resolution from three members of the school committee saying, you damn well better well create a framework for reintroducing algebra at the seventh and eighth grade here and stop screwing around.
Wow.
So good for them. I'm glad that we finally got some attention.
Was it that enough people got angry and it's election season and they're reacting? That's how I feel about it.
I think I'm
a little more sarcastic than you, though.
I've heard some, I have not followed school committee or school department things nearly as close as I have been following city council matters. But I've actually been hearing things now that I'm a candidate and people want to tell me stuff that are actually pretty frightening. You know, like, for example, a parent who wanted to find out some information and wanted to even photograph some curricular materials that were being used in the schools and was forbidden from doing so because I think they didn't want to suffer the controversy of it getting out into the press and that maybe even the national press about what they were emphasizing.
Robert,
I thought to myself, wait a minute, a parent can't actually get access to curricular materials for the Cambridge schools where their children are being educated?
Absolutely not. And Robert, since you've decided to be crazy and put your hat in the ring, it means that I get to unload on you because that's my position in this city. But the school right now, I had to take my kids out of the school system because it's a total freaking mess. It's completely overloaded with administration. It's completely run into the ground. The fact that these counselors are fighting to put math back into class should be a flare to everybody in the city right now. And certainly the Globe article that I'm so glad that that there was actually a Globe article about this too. And it's just shocking that this is even an issue. You just wouldn't imagine that this is something that happened in Cambridge. But we pay $38,000 per pupil in this school. About $3 of that goes to the actual students. And the rest of it goes to this overbloated administration, which keeps parents out. As a parent during the pandemic, I lost my freaking mind trying to get our kids back into school, trying to create some sense of normalcy, being fought entirely the entire step of the way by these lunatics who essentially own the school system with the teachers union.
You know, I always want to be a little cautious because I do not follow school committee and school,
not me.
And nor do I have any children in the school system. Yeah. So as a result, you know, everything I know is either secondhand or whatever. But, you know, I do teach mathematics for a living. That's what I've been doing for decades and decades and decades, you know. And so I don't think anybody would be shocked to hear that I'm a person who would really like to see schools just educate, you know, and not indoctrinate, but just educate. So I want to see every student excel in math. And I want also to make sure that if students are accelerating in math, that they're not hindered in their ability to do so be out of some sort of nonsensical viewpoint about what constitutes equity.
Well, it's dogmatic. And I think that they've lost the plot because I think it's, you know, San Francisco tried this experiment a decade or so ago, and it failed miserably. The kids who were doing great did worse. The kids who were still in that sort of achievement gap remain so. But, you know, there's so many smart and engaged people in this city. But if you look at our school system and the dropout rate of people taking their kids out, the fact that every parent right now who has a kid in fifth grade is looking at middle school, trying to apply for private schools because everyone goes to private school from sixth to eighth grade because the middle schools are terrible, notoriously so. You have these weird immersion programs that in some cases act like mini private schools within the system. It's one of the most like convoluted school systems I've ever been a part of. And like, to my mind, it was just shocking that like, they don't want parents involved at all. And forget the social stuff. I just care about what my kids are learning math and being able to read, which my son definitely couldn't do. And I had to teach him how to do that. But like algebra at his new school, which is a private school, he's in third grade right now, going to fourth. They were looking at algebra this year, just looking at it, exploring it, but not doing problems. But like in third grade, this is something they were exposed to. I find it shocking that we are just at this right position right now where Eugenia is leading the charge. And the charge is, let's learn math and let's learn how to read.
Well, I think there may be some evidence that maybe maybe some of the others, including some of the incumbents, may actually join in on that. But, you know, the thing is I don't know enough about it to be able to say this definitively, but I just get the feeling that there's, I'm going to say it straight out. There are a lot of people who simply wouldn't say shit if they had a mouthful in Cambridge. Right. And so you can actually have people who are actually serving on the school committee, and there's this like a whole, constellation of thoughts and about, you know, certain ways of, you know, of training our students to be our, you know, good citizens with good thoughts and whatever. And then nobody wants to basically say, excuse me, King, but you're naked, you know? and so the fact that somebody didn't sort of raise the alarm about the fact that maybe some of the math decisions about basic things like mathematics, that they didn't raise that alarm earlier, I mean, that's kind of a terrible thing in itself, but maybe it's not too late to at least start, you know, moving things back into a good direction.
Never too late, Robert. Never too late to do the right thing. Who else we got up there?
All right. So let's, let me navigate my way back to the list here. You know, we have Eugenia Schrott. Who? I'll go with who, right? Who? And, it was the first full papers, as I mentioned earlier, France Pierre, who's also running for city council, strange as it may seem, pulled papers for school committee. Andrew King, who's the son of Jonathan King, who's been a biology professor at MIT and a long, very long time activist in quite a few causes.
Yeah, we need more activists in the school committee. How many kids how many kids does Andrew have? A couple in the system?
I don't know. Don't know. Maybe none. I think he's pretty young, so it's possible he does, but I don't know. I actually don't know. I know who he is.
I think there ought to be a rule that you're not allowed to run for school committee unless you got kids in the system.
Boy, that would have disqualified quite a few people. Sorry, Freddie.
The school committee is the parents' representative group. You need to have skin in the game.
Well, we certainly need, I would think an ideal school committee would have a combination of parents and teachers and people who would just have a good business sense how to run a good operation, as the board of directors, as it were, for the school department, to give some direction to the school superintendent. I mean, their role fundamentally is much more limited nowadays under ed reform, thanks to Tom Birmingham and others 30 years ago. School committee used to be sort of a launching pad for political careers. It's become less so because it's kind of hard to build up a patronage network like you used to be able to do by hiring everybody. I mean, they used to hire everybody once upon a time. Anyway, back to the list. So it's Rachel Weinstein, who's, I think she's been serving now for at least two terms. I mean, I certainly know where to look because I'm the guy who keeps all the records of this stuff. And Jose Luis Rojas Villarreal, again, who's now, this would be probably his third. I think he's a two-termer now, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Carolyn Hunter, who filled the vacancy created by Akriti Bambi last December. But she had been a candidate and a very long time, member of the school, working within the public schools. So, you know, she's certainly, you know, earned her chops there. Bobby Travers, who, I mean, many of us have known Bobby forever, but, he's very basically involved in the Cambridge Public Schools for a long, long time, and very actively involved in some of the union affairs, I might add, which you may or may not like, but Bobby, you know, he pulled papers and he turned in 50 signatures, got 50 right away. He was like the first guy to turn in his signatures. So he's one of the people, like a child of East Cambridge, that has really deep roots and probably has a lot of support there. And then somebody named Alborz Bejnud, and I talked to him. I was there when he pulled his papers. So he seems he works, I think, in some of the biotech or life sciences. He's a scientist. So I thought, well, okay, that's good,
Yeah.
And then finally, David J. Weinstein, who's an incumbent, pulled papers. He was the last to pull papers. So that's the lot of them right there. So
those are the faces I had to, a few of those faces I had to look at during the pandemic. And I think my mom always said, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it. And obviously I didn't listen too closely to that lesson, but I think, if you can't, it's like the tea, right? You know, we have a history of different governors, we have a history of different mayors, and you know, every year we say, oh, it's so and so's fault that the T is broken. You know, I look at the school system the same way. It's a continuum of apathy and doing the same thing over and over and over again. And in Cambridge tradition, with a $1 billion budget, spending our way through our problems when it takes people getting in, and also in this particular instance, parents are the cure for our school system.
You know, it's an interesting thing about the philosophy of money. People have this notion that if you just spend a lot of money, because don't you know, damn it, we got to do something.
Right.
So let's just spend a lot of money and then the problems will be solved. So we spend a lot of money supposedly addressing the affordability of housing, and housing has become more unaffordable.
Robert, I have to stop you for just 1 second because I love you. But like, I probably owe the city council and councils before them a huge apology. I've been super critical of their housing policies, but they have made me an incredibly wealthy human being vis-a-vis my own single family house. They have made it so that a single family house in Cambridge is worth median price over $2.5 million.
I don't know for sure whether this would have made any difference, because, you know, and you certainly can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, right?
Yeah.
But once upon a time, we almost would call it like the nuclear control rods that kind of kept things from really going out of control. I mean, some might argue it was rent control, right? But the thing is that we had a lot of multifamily homes, two family mm-hmm. homes, three family homes. And let's face it, there are actually a lot of people who wouldn't want to own a two family or a three family because there's responsibilities associated right. with them. So those became the mechanisms for working class people to basically get a piece of the action.
Yep.
And then there were people who could, you know, go to a single family home, and, you know, and there was always something for them as well. But, you know, condominiumization has been good for some people in that you could argue that, well, you couldn't afford a whole house, you could at least get a piece of a house, right? So maybe that was your road to some level of affordability. Mm-hmm. But in the end, the massive wide-scale condominiumization of Cambridge basically took away all those multifamily opportunities that more working class kind of people for the last century utilized in order to, you know, get by. I may be a university mathematics person here, sure, but you know, I've never earned a lot of money. I mean, I'm not a carpenter or plumber, whatever.
So what if you have?
No problem there.
You don't have to proselytize yourself in front of the Church of Progressivism in front of me.
But I'm only pointing out that, you know, it was the fact that I was able to get a triple decker many years ago.
Right.
Would have been my only opportunity to that's how I've been able to live here, afford here, and provide affordable housing to others.
And while the median price for a single family house is what it is, the median price for a two family, three family is less than that, just so you're aware.
Right, but the thing is that's how it used to be, and that was sort of the secret sauce.
That's what this council and the continuum of council has created. Now you can they blame the loss of rent control, their biggest market distortion that they had, but that actually created a built up, pent up, massive demand and stopped the construction of housing. So now our supply is incredibly limited, and the deep regulatory environment that they created a whole hornet's nest of reasons why you wouldn't want to build housing in the city, and which they try to fix with more market distortions like the AHO or inclusionary zoning. But inclusionary zoning and the AHO only make housing more expensive. So
I think you are exactly correct.
So what winds up happening is you limit what's getting built, you reduce the stock. And like, it's the most basic principle, supply and demand, which people seem to think it just doesn't work in Cambridge. For some reason, the thing that works everywhere else on the planet does not work in Cambridge.
I'll just say it straight out. Everybody who's promising that they're going to deliver affordability, they're lying.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is that housing may very well one day become affordable again through a combination of inflation and just time. So if, you know, you kind of take a look at the long game. So maybe
they're very, very long. You have to push construction. A lot of
right. Just construction here, but basically just construction generally, certainly in Eastern Massachusetts, There needs to be whole new communities growing. Yeah.
I don't believe in a Cambridge-centric universe.
Really?
I don't. I know I'll get burned at the stake for this, but you know, our housing solution, we don't have a house. We have a regional solution. We don't change in Cambridge.
But listen, I'm soon going to be going up on candidate forums and do this where everybody's going to promise everybody everything.
Oh, you're
going
to have to
vote for me because I really care about this, that, and the other thing. And you know, the housing issue will be front and center always here. But honestly, you know, as far as I can tell, and I think I understand this reasonably well, most of them are just going to basically be blowing smoke.
Yeah, and, well, they also don't have any level of expertise to discuss the matter. So, like,
right, they're going to say things. You know, it comes back to that, but we got to do something. Well, you know, sure. Let me tell you something. Doing something stupid is sometimes
worse than nothing.
Than not doing anything, yeah. You know? And I think that oftentimes we really do things that are, well, not only stupid, but also pretty anti-democratic.
Well,
you know,
anti-democratic. So, I mean, there's a whole litany of things, like the gas hookup ban that's about to happen in August, right? Patty Nolan also has a suggestion that we should be running extension cords from houses across sidewalks to feed lithium ion batteries with wheels. And I'm puzzled because I actually think EV cars are, if you really believe in climate change and you really believe that we should be limiting our transportation model, then EV cars are just cars with batteries that explode that you can't put out with water. So like why, and then running extension cord across a sidewalk that creates another hazard, which you're like, well, it'll be ADA compliant. Like, but how do you get that message out? It'll be a series of complaints. ISD will get involved. You've made everyone run around in circles. And what have you accomplished? Zero. And in fact, most of the solutions the council has come up with have actually will result in the burning of more fossil fuels, the creation of more greenhouse gases in our atmosphere, and actually robbing communities from the ability to update themselves. So like,
well, you know, I had a very interesting conversation today over lunch. This was up at the Dean's Lunch at Harvard Summer School with a person who's basically involved in actually teaching a course on green management, you know, in companies and whatever. And, you know, he's coming from Europe. And we had a very, very nice conversation. And really what it was about was the wrongheadedness of simply dictating to people what they are required to do because we know what's best. Yes. As opposed to, and I always see that's kind of like lazy governance. Lazy governance is where you just say, well, I have decided for you, do this. I am under no obligation to convince you because you're just a dumb resident, right? Whereas good governance would be one where you, as either a city councilor or a school committee member or a member of the city staff, says we have some strong convincing to do. Let's educate people about the fact that maybe they can save money by doing the following list of things, and then convince them. And then over time, I'm going to just assert that over time you will end up with a better result if every you time. Simply win people over and convince them to do things that are rational.
The worst part about it for Cambridge is like 90% to 99 to 95% of our population is there. We're all kind of in the same like political bubble, even crazy me. Like, but when you give me a problem that cannot be solved and give me a regulatory environment that I cannot comply with, I'm going to fight you all day long. This is the thing I hate the most about progressives in the city, is they make me defend positions that I otherwise would never in a million years.
So Patrick, I was under the impression that the reason why you put solar panels when you built your home,
yes,
on the roof was because you were instructed to do so. Isn't that true?
Oh, why it wasn't, Robert. In fact, I hate Eversource more than I hate any other organization on the planet. And in fact, the idea of stealing electricity from the sun brings me great joy. And if I could take myself completely off the grid, I would. Amen.
Now, I think I don't want this to go to your head here, but I think you're a very ordinary person in some respects, Patrick, because I think if many a person who is in a position such as yours were to be buying a home or whatever and making hard decisions about where to invest their dollars, they may make similar decisions to you. So you're really not so special, are you?
I am not. And neither is my electric bill. So right. I think like, you know, most people, like, remember when we wanted to get aluminum cans off the ground and we decided that if we give people 5 cents for doing so, they might do it. And they did.
Yeah.
You know, to my mind, like in this moment, before we have technological breakthroughs that can really have a significant impact, these little austeric type moves are not going to push the needle. But if you really want to get people on the same page, there's a way to do it, and there's a way to incentivize, and there's a way to educate and get, but ramming it down the throats of people and saying that we have to do something.
The gentleman with whom I was speaking today up at Harvard basically was given the story about what's been happening in Germany, where in fact the pushback from residents who are basically being told, especially in this specific situation, because they were heavily reliant on natural gas from Russia.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So they had to make some really harsh decisions, but then the government was just saying, you will do this, you will do that. And they ended up pushing back.
Right.
Whereas in fact, many of those very same people, if you simply brought them along, they would have actually been perfectly comfortable making really good rational decisions. You know, you got to begin by respecting the people.
At the end of the day, those decisions should not be made by 9 people whose expertise is not in any of these fields.
I think that's wise advice, actually. The other thing that's interesting is that Cambridge actually houses more very smart, scientifically oriented people who actually understand a lot of these solutions.
We do
something. Yes, we do. And, you know, I didn't really see a whole lot of them up there amongst the activists when of the more recent changes.
It's weird. I never really made the connection between Cambridge and science before. So are you saying we have a scientist in this town?
You know, I actually have met a few. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. News to me. You learned something on the show, don't you?
You know, another shocking reality, I know this will break your heart, but there are actually a lot of reasonable people in this city too. You would never know that until watching the city council meeting sometimes. Anyway, we're down to 10 seconds here, so I guess we'll have to bid our adieu, and we'll be back again soon on Cambridge Inside.
Thank you for having me. Bye.